This episode is sponsored by More Than a Number, the brand new podcast from ICAEW. Search for More Than a Number in your podcast app to hear Louise Cooper and thought leaders unpacking the numbers behind some of the most pertinent questions of our time.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and James Forsyth. So today at lunchtime, Boris Johnson is meeting Leo Varadkar for a meeting in Cheshire. A tunnel meeting, James. Is this the tunnel we've been talking about so far?
No, this is not the intensive negotiations point. This is Boris Johnson and Leo Varadkar sitting down to essentially see if there is any way you could possibly get to an agreement. I think it's fair to say that no one expects them to come out of this meeting and say, we've done it, it's all solved. And I think the other thing that's going on here is, as we get into this phase, I don't think anyone on either side now thinks we're going to get a deal this side of October the 19th. No one wants to look like the person who walked away from the table. Everyone wants it to look like they were the reasonable ones who tried to the last possible minute to get a deal, and it's the other side who've pulled the plug. So I think you'll see more of these meetings going on, but I don't think anyone holds out any great hope for what's going to come out of today.
I think we're also heading to almost thinking beyond this month. There's a general, I suppose, majority view now, which has been growing over recent weeks, particularly this week, that no deal will be agreed, an extension will be agreed in some shape or form, and some type of vote will follow. And after that, whoever is in government, if it is the Tories, will have to try and work out what they're going to do with Brexit. Is that a second referendum? If it was Labour, Lib Dem, perhaps coalition government, it would be a second referendum. The SNP want that. If it is the Conservative Party, are they heading to no deal or are they going to try and get some kind of deal back? So I think what's interesting in terms of Boris Johnson meeting with Leo Varadkar is no one is really expecting this big eureka moment in terms of this time. But can they find any common ground? So going forward, you might work out where the compromise could be if the Tories have a majority, or is this gulf on a single customs territory for the UK just something which he can't countenance in any scenario? Because if that's the case, we could potentially be heading to an eventual no deal.
So James, this week Boris Johnson has been clarifying to the One Nation Tories that he will not be campaigning on a no deal pledge in the next election, despite what the Number 10 source said earlier this week. Do you think the government has changed their position? Does it have a position on that?
Well, no, I mean the two things are compatible. So first of all, one of Number 10's frustrations is that the Irish have, as Katie said, been essentially acting like, we don't need to accept this offer now. Let's go and see if let's pocket the concessions. Let's see if he can get a majority and then we'll engage with it. Number 10 want to create some doubt as to whether the offer will be there after an election. I also think that, but it's important to distinguish between two things. Get Brexit done immediately is not a no-deal platform. I think the policy will be, the manifesto position will be something like, get Brexit done immediately. If the EU wishes to avoid no deal, it should accept our offer.
No more negotiations.
And talking to various cabinet ministers yesterday, who are on the softer Brexit side of things, they can all live with that. Because it's actually not that different from the position that they signed up to when they signed up to serve in this cabinet in the first place. So I think something like that is the position. I mean, that sounds tough enough to enable Boris Johnson to carry on trying to reunite the Leave vote and squeeze the Brexit party. But at the same time, it's enough for Tory MPs who don't want to say that they're actively going for no deal to say, no, we're still trying to get a deal. We just need the EU to compromise.
Katie, do you get the feeling that these cabinet ministers who are still on side with Boris Johnson might, when no deal becomes more of a possibility after the next election, do an Amber Rudd, i.e. sign up to something and then realise actually a deal is not possible and then quit?
Well, they've all signed up to no deal. Amber Rudd also did, but clearly she saw it in a way, her place in cabinet is not changing that much, because Theresa May's policy had been to try and get a deal, and if it doesn't work, go to no deal. So I don't think she viewed it as enough of a shift. Clearly, then when no deal started to look more likely, she realised she couldn't stay there. I think the bulk of the cabinet are going to stay in place. I think that if you hear, the various people on resignation watch, there are several names that come up. You have Geoffrey Cox, you have Julian Smith, you also have Matt Hancock and Nicky Morgan. I think it's very unlikely, and a obviously hostage to fortune here, but I think currently it's unlikely that Matt Hancock would resign. Everyone is pushing very hard against that. And I think in a way, he's gone out on such a limb, you know, with these multimedia events. He did a very sharp pivot, maybe like a sharp U-turn during the leadership contest when he went from running to backing Boris Johnson after saying negative things about no deal, that I think he's so far along the line now. I think it's someone who'd be optimistic for a deal, but I can't see him quitting over it. And similarly, Nicky Morgan, I think, is not actually seen as someone who's about to quit. I think that if you look at Julian Smith, someone who repeatedly at Cabinet has voiced concerns, and specifically because of his brief as Northern Ireland Secretary, has concerns about what is being proposed on the border, that is someone who could go. And then Geoffrey Cox, but that's a lot down to the law rather than, I think, the politics of no deal, which is, how is Number 10 planning to actually play getting around the Hillary Benn bill, and what they plan to do in the coming weeks? Because I think if you are Attorney General and it is your legal advice, you're in a particularly difficult position if they want to bend things. So I think that's why those two are the ones that come up. I think ultimately, if the Tories win a majority at the next election, also you see it in the selection of candidates, they are becoming a very Brexit-heavy party. There is often this talk, you know, two sides of the Tory party on Brexit. Well, one side has been slowly going out the door in several stages for, you know, a couple of weeks, months now. If you look at the One Nation caucus that met with Boris Johnson yesterday, they are a depleted bunch. If you look at the figures there, you know, you don't have Amber Rudd. There are others who, you know, have lost the whip, Nicola Soames. But there's also probably a quieter contingent who said they're not seeking re-election. People like Nick Hurd. Mm. You have Claire Perry not seeking re-election.
Caroline Spelman.
So I think that if we do see the Tories winning a majority at the next election, the Tory party will look a bit different to it does now, and I think you're less likely to have a loud anti-no-deal contingent.
I think also it's worth bearing in mind how you get to no-deal matters a lot. You know, Greg Clark, you know, very anti-no-deal, one of the 21 who lost the Tory whip. He was in the Commons the other day urging the EU to compromise and engage with the proposals. And I think if you got to a situation where Boris Johnson wins the majority, he goes back to Brussels and he says, now I have a majority, I can pass this through my parliament, please engage in my proposal, and the EU response is the same as it is now, at that point, I think it's quite easy for even those cabinet ministers who are very not keen on no deal to say, well, it's not our choice. Yeah. This no deal has been forced on the UK by the EU's refusal to move. It's not an unreasonable proposition to say that the UK should be able to leave the European Union of its customs territory intact. You know, I also think, you know, in Katie's analysis on how people's particular jobs is what makes people a bigger risk or not, it's also worth remembering that Nicky Morgan did all the Northern Ireland alternative border, alternative arrangement stuff, which again makes her actually more sympathetic to what Boris Johnson is trying to do. And I think a lot of her complaint at Cabinet was about consult the Cabinet more rather than
the briefing that went to the press.
I cannot put up with what you're doing. I also think someone Number 10 said to me yesterday, you worry about Cabinet ministers when they go quiet. So okay. As long as you're hearing in the press that people are unhappy about this or unhappy about that, that indicates that they're probably going to stick around. Is as with Amber Rudd, it's the kind of 72 hours of silence, which was the longest period of silence we'd had from Amber Rudd in quite some time, was what was the indicator that she was planning to go, I think. I mean, and I think that is what, you know, it's the calm before the storm.
Sure.
You know, if suddenly there stopped being any newspaper stories about unhappy cabinet ministers, that's when they'll tend to begin to expect the postman's knock.
Katie, now we've been talking about a general election as if it's imminent, but you write on Coffee House today that actually it might not be as soon as the Tories are hoping for it to be.
Yeah, I think there's growing concern amongst a few cabinet ministers, but also Conservative MPs, that they might not get the general election this side of the year. It might be next year. Now, common sense and logic would dictate that it would be this side of Christmas. If you think about it, ultimately, the expectation is we're heading to an extension, and Labour have said on the record several times that they will go for an election once an extension has been agreed. Initially, people thought it would be after royal assent for the bill. Then it seemed to be once, you know, you're almost in it and you have it in writing. So they thought, you know, Number 10 couldn't be tricky about it. But they have moved the goalposts before. And I mean, one cabinet minister said to me the reason that they're concerned it might not be till next year is that if you look at the polls and Labour MPs are And so are those, you know, they're obviously getting quite good for the Conservative Party and they're getting very bad for Labour. Labour and the Lib Dems seem to be almost equal pegging when it comes to the percentage in a couple of the polls, and that's putting Labour MPs off. You have figures such as Tom Watson, who doesn't have a huge sway in the leader's office with Jeremy Corbyn, but at the same time does have a group of MPs who are loyal to him and push things. You have Oliver Letwin from the Tories, and there are other, you know, figures coming out and saying, why not have a second referendum first? Now, I do think it's hard to pass that referendum legislation. I think it'd be tricky. We've seen previously there aren't the numbers for it. But even if you don't go all that way, and we think there'll be efforts next week to try and put this in motion, you could have a situation where things get delayed as there are more talks, and like Labour activists, for example, don't like the idea of doing an election in the middle of winter because they think that bad weather suffers for them. So I think that it's still more likely the election is this year. I think the view of number 10 is that it will be. But we all remember that number 10 thought the election would be on the 15th of October. So I don't think necessarily the Conservative view of what is rational for the opposition parties to do is something which necessarily translates into reality. I mean, all the opposition parties are talking. The SNP have it in their interest to have it sooner rather than later. I think there are some figures who are worried about the impact of the Alex Salmond trial, which is coming up. But if I now ask a Tory MP when they think the next election will be, one and two will say next year. One and two will say, you know, we're heading to November, December, but there's just this creeping concern that they might try and push it back a bit longer. And again, it comes down to a bit, how does the extension play out? Because what Labour and the SNP can agree on, and I think the Liberal Democrats, is they would like to go into an election when the Tories look as though they won't do particularly well. Now, there are other constraints which mean that they might want to push it, but if Boris Johnson comes out unscathed from requesting an election, you might see that chorus of delaying it grow.
James, is something like that viable? I mean, the longer they keep this sort of zombie government hostage in number 10, wouldn't people get more frustrated with the people who are preventing an election from happening, from anything from breaking the deadlock? So couldn't Labour actually be harmed by keeping the government in number 10 for longer?
Yeah, I think the Tory message is going to be get Brexit done, break the gridlock, break the logjam, as you say, the longer this goes on. I think Katie is right, and I think what we'll see on this Saturday sitting is I think there will be an attempt to get a second referendum up and running. I think if that fails then, so if it fails again for a fifth time, a second referendum fails in this parliament, it would be a sign that nothing has majority in this parliament, at which point I struggle to see how you don't end up on an election. But I think Katie's right, you've not got any great enthusiasm from Labour MPs. But I think if the extension only runs to the 31st of January 2020, you're going to have an election in winter, you know, by definition. And
I keep hearing spring from the people who are worried about it.
May, I hear.
Wait, so that would be after the January deadline.
Yeah, so what happened after my wedding?
So then Boris Johnson, would they force him to ask for another extension?
No, but you see that the EU is not, yeah.
I think, again, from trying to explain these theories, logic tells you one thing, but there are various theories going around. And if you start going to polls and there is a majority for an extension, there's no you've got to see what the extension Brussels grants is. That will shape things. But two, someone said, well, if we could just keep him there until we got the polls back to where we wanted them to be. Like, you could, if it does seem as though Boris Johnson staying in and Brexit being delayed hurts him more than the opposition parties, you could see some strange things happening.
Sure.
We've seen a lot of strange things over the past couple of years.
This is the issue. The Benn Act has essentially handed all of this initiative to the EU about how long the extension it grants is. But I think if the EU granted an extension the 31st of January, and then UK politicians said, we aren't actually going to do anything in that time, I think at that point, Emmanuel Macron's patience would finally snap, and he would say, no, I'm not giving you another extension if you aren't going to do anything in that extension at all. So I think the election will be... I mean, unless the extension is dramatically longer than we expect, I mean, the election will have to be by 31st of January 2020. I find it hard to see how it stretches into the spring. But as you know, there are many things that are hard to see that have happened, so who knows?
One thing that is easy to see, I think at least, is that John Bercow will be leaving at the end of October. Yes, exactly. Would caveat that one. James, you think he might not go?
Well, no. I just think that, you know, his point of going was this idea everyone thought that everything would be... The parliamentary dramas would be sorted by the 31st of October. I don't think that's right. as 13 hours. Look, I still think you will. I mean, you know, the obvious, the kind of the season finale is obviously you end up with John Bercow in the Government of National Unity. but I'm being flippant rather than serious. Yeah, so we have, I mean, one of the reasons John Bercow wanted to go when he did, rather than having a new parliament elect a new speaker, was that basically by having the speaker chosen by this parliament, he made it more likely that you would get an activist Remainery speaker.
And speaking of those alternatives, Katie, how have the candidates for speaker been getting on? I mean, are they the sort of heirs to Bercow that he hopes they will be?
There was a hustings yesterday in Parliament, and I think overall it seems that most of the candidates took on a fairly anti-Bercow tone, or at least they were trying to suggest that they would be very different to John Bercow. Now, the bulk of those candidates didn't want to get rid of John Bercow any time previously when the Tories have been trying. Yet, now I think there's probably an electoral advantage when trying to get your colleagues on side to being a bit critical of John Bercow. So they all took different levels of it. I think that if you are looking for a continuity John Bercow candidate, and this person says they would not be, it's Harriet Harman. And that's because if you look at how she responded to a couple of the questions about, you know, the SO24 debate, so whether or not it should be okay for opposition MPs backbenchers to take control of the order paper, mm-hmm. and that was the right call by John Bercow. She was the one who suggested it was. Others suggested actually no. I think Chris Bryant is probably becoming the most outspoken anti-Bercow candidate, saying, I think going further than Lindsay Hoyle, the deputy speaker who is the current favourite, to actually say that he almost criticised John Bercow on a few things by saying how different he would be. I think still the favourite is Lindsay Hoyle. Harriet Harman is a close second. Mm. And then I think Chris Bryant is winning some supporters in the Tory party by just being so critical of John Bercow.
But for anyone always believes a vote winner. That Chris Bryant, I mean, if you think the speaker speaks too much, to elect Chris Bryant the speaker as a solution to that problem is, how should we put this, novel.
No, he has promised to make PMQs a mere half an hour.
I know, I feel that the Westminster restaurant trade will be rooting hard for whoever will shorten it.
James and Katie, thanks very much. And speaking of Harriet Harman, tomorrow we will be releasing a new Women with Balls podcast where Katie Balls talks to Lynn Barber, the award-winning journalist, about her lifetime of interviewing high-profile politicians, including Harriet Harman. And don't forget, we have that special Robert Harris interview with Sam Leith. So do go on to spectator.co.uk/Harris if you'd like to see them in conversation on the 23rd of October. Thanks for listening and join us again tomorrow.
Thanks to our sponsor, More Than a Number, the new podcast from ICAEW. Here, presenter Louise Cooper in discussion with thought leaders, unpacking the numbers behind some of the most pertinent questions of our time. Are businesses ill-prepared to cope with climate change? Is workplace inequality inevitable? And do businesses really have an age problem? Simply search for More Than a Number in your podcast app to download now.